I'm going to try and give a compliment here, and I don't want it to sound bad, but you played, three or four weeks ago, I think it was, something like that, in church, and I think Pete and Caleb have been practicing together a little bit more, but the pitch really improved, which makes it sound like it was really bad last time, and that's not my point. My point is that sounded really nice. People will say to me after church, "Pastor, that was a good one today." So you understand, like, I guess last week was a real bummer. So, and I understand, I kind of think of it like batting averages. You know, if you can get a hit one out of three times, you're doing really well. So, so pick your Sundays carefully, I guess. What we do on Lord's Table Sundays is I think of our time together, speaking time, a little bit more as devotion than sermon. It's designed to help prepare. We have had a theme throughout the course of the of this year, 2017, called Prayer and Purity, challenging you as a congregation to deepen in both of these areas, prayer and purity. And so for the remainder of the year, August, and then September, and then October, November, December, I've chosen a verse that will help to push through. And so our dare prayer is found in James chapter 1, verses 5 through 8, the passage that we're going to be looking at this morning quite briefly. And the first verse really catches the prayer that we are daring you to pray, and daring you to pray it every day this month. Okay, it's the 3rd of September, so 1/10 of the month is already gone. But to dare you to pray this prayer every day, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. So to ask God for wisdom every single day. And so with that, I think I'll just enter into talking to you a little bit about this passage. Let's sit down at a table. Let's sit down at a table, and you're going to take a seat, and there would be three others. Perhaps we could call it a card table. And so there's just four of you at that table. And as you sit down there, you sit down there as wisdom. Who would be your friends? Because in the book of James, James leads with the idea of wisdom. It's not that James is against any of the other virtues, but wisdom seems to be particularly important to James. Makes sense. He's the counterpart to the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament of the wisdom literature. But if also at the table were not only James, but let's say Paul. Well, Paul is known for faith. As you read through the writings of Paul, you would see there that he speaks of faith, and his theology is marked by that. It's not that Paul is against wisdom in any way. In fact, he prays specifically for wisdom over in Ephesians 1. But he wants faith. And then across the table from you would be Peter. And Peter in his epistles is known for hope. And then on your right over here on this side would be John. And John is known in his epistles and in the Gospel of John as well as being the apostle of love. So let's say that the four of you got together every single day. Wisdom and faith and hope and love. And try to imagine with me what kinds of conversations that you would have as you talk about all the different kinds of things that you would talk about. You know, you could talk about jobs, or you could talk about finances, or you could talk about politics, or you could talk about problems. But whatever you talked about, it would come from the perspective of wisdom and faith and hope and love. And it would be a joy to be a part of that. I want to have you picture then another table in the room just a little further over. There's another four characters at that particular table. But they would be the opposite of these four. And I want us to imagine what it would be like to sit at that particular table, where in the chair of wisdom, a man named Foolishness has stepped in, and he sits down at the table. Foolishness, not in the sense of being silly or sappy in some kind of way, but he's just a fool. It's not that he doesn't take himself seriously. It may actually mean that he takes himself way too seriously. But he just follows the crowd. He just imitates what everybody, he's just espousing the party line. He doesn't really think, but he does a lot of emoting, I suppose. Well, over here on the left, where Paul was sitting, and at this table you had faith, there you've got the skeptic. In everything you say, that guy says, well, I doubt that. Well, that's never going to happen. And over again, he just casts clouds of doubt upon everything that is hopeful at all. And of course, on the opposite side of the table where Peter was sitting, you have the opposite of hope. And there you have your good friend, Despair. He's such a good guy to be around. Despair. Just discouragement and despair. And then over here on the side of love, you've got what? You've got the person who is so completely selfish. And if he were merely selfish, it wouldn't be so bad. But he's also hateful. So how would you like to get up every morning and sit at that particular table? But we're really not talking about the people that you sit with today. We are talking about the person that you are. The person that you are, the seat at which table you sit at. And this prayer for wisdom is, Lord, I need wisdom. And why would we pray that prayer? Because looking out at you, you appear to be intelligent people. And so as I look across, just looking, you look to be wise people. But I've gotten to know you. And worse than that, I know myself. And we aren't so wise as we think we are. And one of the characteristics, I think, of being under scriptural teaching is that we learn that we're not as wise as we think we are. And so as we go along in some of the characteristics that we find in this passage that we'll run through pretty quickly, we want to follow the crowd. We want to be different, just like everybody else. We want to be with it. We want to catch the new notion. And we find out that the new notion is merely a fad, and it's rather silly and rather trite and is of no lasting value. And so we listen to the news or we read the magazines. And so there were three girls leaving Starbucks the other day. Three girls. They were so cool. And they were all dressed almost exactly alike. Because they knew how to dress, right? I don't think they called each other that morning to know the right shoes and the right whatever you call those things you wear on your bottom half these days, and then the tops that all, you know, really were in the same color family and the same fit. But they all read the same magazines. They all subscribed to the same wisdom that perhaps isn't so wise after all. And God has a kind of wisdom for us if we would ask for it and if we would receive it that we desperately need if we are going to be of use to Him in this world. So, why ask for wisdom? Because we lack it. We lack wisdom and we need to ask for it. That's how God delights to give it to us. I do want to read a passage for you this morning, and from the Old Testament, it's 1 Kings chapter 3. I really can't talk to you about asking for wisdom without using just the illustration that's perfect from the Old Testament. It's from Solomon. In 1 Kings 3, he's just ascended to the throne. His father was King David. His father was the champion. His father was the great king. And there would never be another king as great as David until Jesus himself came along. But Solomon was now to fill these shoes of his great father, David. He knew that he got into that position, humanly speaking, by the skin of his teeth. He had many brothers born of many different mothers, and they were vying for the throne, and it was only as Bathsheba and one of the prophets went along to beseech that David kept his word, that Solomon was in this position at all, and many people doubted that he was the right man for the job. And I want to read for you what he says in his prayer. Then Solomon said to the Lord, "You have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father. According as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart towards you, And you have reserved for him this great loving kindness that you have given him a son to sit on this throne as it is this day. Solomon says, and it's me. Verse 7. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant, that's me, king in place of my father David, yet I am but a little child. So this month, as every day, you try to pray this prayer, Lord, give me wisdom. Maybe that's part of your prayer, because Lord, I'm just like a little child before you. Before you, I don't know much. Before you, I don't have experience. And so, Lord, please give me wisdom. I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. And for Solomon, this gift of wisdom was not merely a gift for himself. This gift of wisdom was for the sake of the people around him. The people around him are more important than just himself. And so your gift of wisdom would be a gift for the church. Your gift of wisdom from God would be a gift for your family. And so we need this gift of wisdom, not just for ourselves, but for others also. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people and to discern between good and evil. That would be the definition of wisdom, an understanding heart to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? Well, that's the end of the prayer. And that would be enough to read. I do want to read also to you, though, God's response to the prayer. And maybe that will be an encouragement to you as you purpose to pray this prayer throughout the month of September, that God is listening. And wouldn't it be something if God answered your prayer something like this? It was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. God said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, that means victory, but have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before, nor shall one like you arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days. Then Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream, and he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered burnt offerings and made peace offerings and made a feast for all of his servants. And so there you have Solomon and God bound together in this prayer covenant, a childlike man asking for wisdom and God giving wisdom and blessings besides. And perhaps that could happen in our midst as well. Why is this important for us? Well, I think many of the reasons would be very clear. But let me just say one thing as far as practical application. We got two of our families missing today. Pouches are just moving over to their house in Brighton Township, and we'll be seeing them, and so that's great. But they're in the midst of all of that. But Ben and Debbie Busick are moving up north, and we won't be seeing them. They're moving away from us. Ben, as many of you know, started attending this church when he was 3 years old. His mom, Tina, brought Ben and older sister, Jessie, to church here. And so I've known, and I was the pastor then. And so it was in one of the first couple years that I was here as pastor. And so Ben was 3, and I've seen Ben grow up, and I was able to do their wedding, and then Ben has become one of our deacons and certainly ministered in Awana. He had a primary role in dealing with one of our difficult projects here of dealing with a person in the congregation with a lot of needs and served well in that capacity as well. And as I try and look at our congregation, and especially, I suppose, our leadership, and I think in terms sometimes of spiritual gifts. And I don't believe that I'm an expert on this, and I don't know how much you can categorize all of these things, but if there's one person in our congregation that I think had the gift of wisdom, I think it's Ben Busick. I don't know that you need to be 80 years old to be wise. Ben's what, 35 or something like that, 34? And I really believe that Ben has the gift of wisdom, and we've just lost the gift of wisdom from being present with us. Now, God didn't lose it, and that gift of wisdom, along with Debbie's gifts and the delight of the whole family, will be a blessing in another church, and we can rejoice over that. But we need wisdom. There's always a shortage of wisdom. In my own life, in your life, but then even collectively together. And so we need to ask God for wisdom. And so many times in conversations with Ben, I come to some quick conclusion. What's the phrase? What seemed right in my own eyes? And then Ben would say something. And I'd go, oh. I'm supposed to be the smart one. It doesn't work that way in God's economy, does it? And so that needs to happen now on many different levels throughout our congregation. And so I think this is an essential prayer to pray. Now, I'm way behind, and we're nearing out of time, so let me just run through some of the blanks here. This passage talks about the complex character of God. He's both mysterious and he's open-handed. I'm going to skip the mysterious right now and go to open-handed, and it comes directly from the phrase that we have there in James chapter 1, who gives generously to all without reproach. And I want to contrast it with how it could happen. Have you ever gone to someone and asked for a favor? Perhaps it was your dad. And you went to your dad and asked for a favor, and you knew it was a little bit of a stretch, and you kind of knew what to expect as well when he responded, "Can I have this?" No, you're not ready for that. You are far too irresponsible for something like that. I couldn't possibly trust you with something like that. If I gave it to you, you would just leave it laying out in the yard the way that you laid this out in the yard and this and this and this and this. And so it would be a complete waste if I gave that to you. Can any of you imagine that scenario? Those words came very naturally to me. Because I'm not like God. Because I'm a God who likes to whittle and whittle and whittle. And God loves to give and give and give. God knows exactly what's going to happen when he gives you wisdom. And yes, it's true that you may waste it at times. You may say, now where is that wisdom that God gave me? I left it somewhere and I can't find it for the life of me. And God knows that that's going to happen. But this phrase says that he gives generously and without discrimination. Just here it is. I want you to have it. I want you to use it. That's the character of our God, and I'd like to talk more about the other as well, but what a God. So many times we think of God as angry, and God as mean, and God as cruel, but no, our God is a God who delights to give. Now, in the economy of God, he ties some of his blessings to his requirement that we simply ask. And if you would read just a little bit further over in the book of James in chapter 4, it says there, you have not because you ask not. I want to give you wisdom. But I've decided that the best is that I will not give it to you until you ask for it. And you haven't asked. And so I'm leaving you to yourself, to your folly, to your foolishness, until you ask. May this be the month that we ask God for wisdom, and that we receive the benefit of that, and that we discover something about the kindness and the open-heartedness and the open-handedness of God. The next line down, for those of you that get mad at me when I don't fill in the blanks, the doubting disposition of man, distracted and double-minded. Let me just run through a couple of these verses without reading them from the text. Romans chapter 4, verse 20. It says there in Romans chapter 4, verse 20, telling the story of Abraham and receiving the promises of God. And then he had to wait for the promises of God for all of those years, from the year when he was 75 all the way till he was 100. And it says that he did not waver in faith. He did not waver in faith. That is, he wasn't double-minded. Some say, oh, God's going to do this. God. No, he's not. No, he's not. It's never. Yeah, he's going to do it. You know, when we get pumped up and then we get let down. But Abraham wasn't like that. And we also need to be single-minded in trusting the promises of God, not double-minded. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, it says that no man can serve two masters. He can only serve one. And you can't be double-minded. Back in the Old Testament, 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah was there on Mount Carmel with the people who were first worshiping God and then worshiping Baal and then worshiping God. He says, how long will you go limping between two opinions? Establish today who it is you will serve. Don't be double-minded. And so that we have from the Old Testament as well. And so we want to be single-minded people who pray to the Lord, who expect from the Lord the things that we need so that we might be full of wisdom and full of faith and full of hope and full of love so that we could resemble the character of Christ. And so in closing, let me just say this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 30, it says there, if I just take part of the line, it says, Jesus Christ has become to us our wisdom. He has become to us our wisdom. And so, as we ask God for wisdom this month, what we are asking for, at least in a sense, is this. Lord, give me more of Christ. Wow. That's a funny way of saying that. God has given all of Christ to us already. But in my experience and in my faith and in the living out of my faith, may I have more of an embrace of Christ, more of an understanding and more of an appreciation and more of fellowship with Christ each day. Because he is my wisdom, and I need to be able to see life through the eyes of Christ, not just doing what is right in my own eyes. And so as we come to the Lord's table, we celebrate the fact that Jesus has become our righteousness as well, and our wisdom, and our sanctification, by giving himself for us on the tree, on the cross for us, bearing the punishment of our sins, so that we could be called children of God. We invite each person to the table. And if you're new with us today, we actually bring the table to you. But we invite each person to partake of the elements of this table who has placed faith in Jesus Christ. That is, you're not trusting your good works for your salvation. You're not trusting your pedigree, who you're related to, for your salvation. You're not trusting church attendance or some man-made measure for self, but rather you're trusting in Jesus Christ and Jesus alone for your salvation. That is the entrance to this table. We want everyone who partakes of these elements to reflect glory to the person of Jesus Christ. It's not about us. It's not what we've attained to. It's what Jesus has done for us. That's what we're celebrating at this particular moment. So I'm going to ask those who are helping to serve communion with us for